Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Journeys. You know, a few weeks ago, we had Walter Cruttenden on as a guest, and it was a phenomenal interview. There was so much to discuss and a wealth of wonderful information. Well, Walter is joining us again this afternoon, and we are really going to get into some in-depth discussion. We're going to be talking about ancient civilization and really what does the year 2012 really mean. But to get started, I have just a few items. As a reminder, visit my website, that's journeyswithrebecca.com, and there you're going to find all the latest Journeys news, guest information, and of course my audio archives. Also, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Fate Magazine, published continuously since 1948. Fate is the longest running publication of its kind, supplying its loyal readership with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown for nearly 60 years. Find out more about Fate by visiting their website, that's www.fatemag.com. Now, quick mention that Daniel Benor, MD, is on Saturday, April 12th from 11 to 1, will be at the Aquarius Bookstore in Kansas City for an experiential introduction to WHEE, that's W-H-E-E, and a book signing. His number is 877-432-5777. Dr. Benor is going to be a guest right here on Journeys later in the week, and now his web address is www.holistichealingresearch.com, and holistic is with a W. Okay, back to tonight's guest, Walter Cruttenden, writer-producer of PBS documentary The Great Year, also author of The Lost Star of Myth and Time. His website address is loststarbook.com. This is going to be quite a journey. We'll be right back with Walter Cruttenden and more of Journeys with Rebecca in just a moment.
Schedule your private psychic reading with Rebecca, a truly gifted intuitive and clairvoyant, and the host of Journeys with Rebecca radio show. Call 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768. Where will your life's journey take you?
More than talk, it's entertaining insight and discoveries. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and we are here with my very special guest as a follow-up, and this is Walter Cruttenden. He's going to be talking again about Lost Star of Myth and Time. Let me welcome you to the show right now, Walter. How are you?
Terrific, Rebecca.
I am absolutely just loving springtime. It's one of my favorite times of the year, Walter. And it just it seems very appropriate to have you here in New Beginnings, because we're going to kind of cover a little bit of that today as far as some of the information. But, you know, last time you were on, we had, we could probably sit and talk 10 or 12 hours about your book and the theories and the understandings and the history, et cetera, and so forth, of the book Lost Star of Myth and Time. But what I think might be good for people, because it's been a couple of weeks since you've been on and we actually talked, maybe if you could, we'll start out with a little bit of a recap from last show, and then we're going to get into some more different areas, but certainly in the same topic matter.
Okay, that's a good way to go. Well, you know, all over the world, we've been finding evidence of higher cultures, and we see it a little bit in the pyramids, the Antikythera device they talked about, the Babylon Battery, all these tidbits, and more authors are writing about this or talking about it. And so what Lost Star Myth and Time really delves into is the theory behind why we see a rising and falling ages of civilization. And we know from Giorgio Santayana's book, he was that professor of history of science at MIT, who along with Hertha von Deschen, who held a similar post at a large German university, wrote this exhaustive book, Hamlet's Mill, where they probably documented over 200 myths that talk about there being a golden age and then a dark age, and it's all tied to the precession of the equinox, which we had discussed. And I'd like to talk, you know, a little bit about what the character of some of these higher ages was like, at least as best as we can describe it, because I think if we're right about this cycle, that as our sun, our star goes around another star, it pulls the Earth along with it and in and out of an electromagnetic field that causes this rising and falling ages. Well, that means that, you know, we're, at least all our research shows, we're moving back towards the other star and we are again in a rising age. And so hopefully we'll get back to some of these things that the ancients talked about.
Yes, and I think let's just recap just a little bit further. When we talked about the precession of the equinox and the 24,000-year cycle, that was also related to, you know, many, many years ago. I mean, we read it still, even in the Bible, you know, it talks about people living to be 900, 1,000 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, more modern history is, people were not living much past 40 or 50. It was considered ancient. But now we know that people are living again, you know, 80s, 90s, 100. It's just not unheard of at all. So if that should also coincide with people's understanding about the rise and fall of civilizations and the whole process of going from the Dark Ages, and each of the signs, if you will, the astrological signs are in the 2,000-year mark. They come in and out of the signs for approximately 2,000 years, which
right.
you believe is part of that whole rise and fall of the civilizations as they go through the different ages, and we're just now beginning the age of Aquarius. So,
right. And, you know, most people think, dawning of the age of Aquarius, that's just some new age kind of thing. And and it's really much more than that. It's an actual astronomical phenomena that astronomers track each year. You know, it's called the precession of the equinox. And, again, just a very brief explanation. If you're looking due east on the date of the equinox, you will see a constellation in the background on sunrise. And 3,000 years ago, Aries would have been there on the spring equinox. And, you know, over the last few thousand years, Pisces has been there. And sure enough, right now, Aquarius is coming into view. It moves about 50 arc seconds per year. And so the ancients simply used this as a way to mark what age we're in. And they told us that, you know, some ages are very high, a golden age, and some are very low. And all over the world, we find, again, this myth and folklore that points to these rising and falling ages. And they paint the higher ages as just a magnificently glorious time here on Earth.
I'm ready for it. I don't know about you, Walter, but I'm sure I'm not going to, at least not in this body, not going to be around until we reach the height of it.
Yes.
It would be nice. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Might not look so good 6,000 years from now.
Well, you know, you talked about age, that one telltale sign of a higher age is when people are living longer, and you mentioned the Bible, and yes, they talked about it, as did the Pharaoh's List, you know, the farther back you go, the longer the pharaohs seem to be living, as did the Chinese dynastic records. So age is certainly one part of it, but it's also living more in harmony with nature is supposed to be another telltale sign of the higher ages, as well as mankind using more of his brain. And scientists today will tell you that we really use very little of our brain. I think the estimates have been anywhere from 10 to 20%.
Right, depending, I think, also on the individuals that they've tested, yeah.
Yeah,
but the average is around 10 to 15.
With an Einstein,
that's what I understand, anyway.
Maybe a little higher.
Yeah.
But the way the Vedic Indians break it out is in the lowest age, the Kali Yuga, mankind uses no more than 25% of his brain. in the age that we've just come into, the Dwapara Yuga, by the end of this period, and it lasts 2,400 years, mankind will be using about half his brain. And in the Silver Age, the Treta Yuga, it's supposed to be up to 75%. And then in the Golden Age, it's said that mankind not only uses all of his brain, but he's actually able to conceive God, which I guess by that sentence, they mean that we can't conceive God in, here in the lower ages.
Maybe it's the difference of maybe from a concept to actually, I guess, touching the consciousness that is God.
I think you're right. You know, I think this lower age concept is, you know, we can only believe in a material world, then God has to just be some guy with a beard, you know, in a far off place.
Because
we can't conceive of him as light or, you know,
as
something.
As an energy source, we have to put a physicality to it.
Yes, yeah. Versus now that we're getting into the Dwapara Yuga and we're, you know, it's supposed to be the age where we realize that things are made of finer particles and finer forces, and sure enough, we've discovered, you know, molecules, atoms, and even that those pieces are made of energy. We can now sort of take God to the next concept. Must be energy. Must be something we can't see, you know. But I still think that probably barely scratches the surface of.
I think, and here's how I've always felt, Walter, about certain, I'm going to call them spiritual or divine or whatever words you want to use, events or feelings or situations, is that our language, the barrier of words, prevents us from articulating exactly what it is that we feel or sense. It's so much beyond that, that words limit the experience.
I completely agree. And again, there's writings here that indicate that in the higher ages, it's a time before speech, before writing. And the way we interpret history right now is, man, if they don't have writing, then they've got to be very primitive.
Right.
At least that's the way we thought of it up until they found Hamakar, the city in Syria. It dates back about 6,000 years, and the headlines are, you know, city predates writing. And yet they found, a very complex city with sewer systems down below the ground. You know, they had hanging gardens, canals. They found different areas that were used for granaries versus, you know, sort of civic functions. And it just totally baffles historians. How can you have a complex society without writing? And the Bible hints at this too, you know, before the Tower of Babel. You know, supposedly people spoke one language, and then it was after a certain period there that we broke into all these different languages. John West, the famous Egyptologist, John Anthony West, has said something very similar in our film, The Great Year, that at the beginning, the very height, when you go back to very early Egypt, when it seems to be at its height, you find very few hieroglyphs, just these very clean and clear symbols, versus a couple thousand years later, the structures aren't built as well, and they're almost gaudy with hieroglyphs.
Yeah.
So,
are you thinking then that maybe some of that might have been maybe at a height of a greater time? Is that what you're saying?
I'm thinking, yeah, that in the silver or golden age, you know, there's these rumors that mankind is clairvoyant and telepathic, that
which would then really go along with why they didn't have writings. They didn't need to.
Very possibly, yeah. Yeah. You know, I was just reading a book by Emmanuel Swedenborg. He was the famous scientist that lived in Stockholm, Sweden, early 1700s, about the same time as Newton. And a very unusual guy in that he had some spiritual experiences. So he went from this one of these greatest scientists in the world to writing about his experiences with saints. And he said that when he would talk to these saints, these beings that he met, that they could convey as much in a few words as it would take the normal person to explain in a half an hour.
Well, and that goes along with, you know, and not to get off the subject, but I have dreams where there's, I call them my guides or whatever. They're talking to me when I'm asleep. And they never open their mouth to speak, but yet I understand everything that they're saying. It's a concept, but I understand, and it does. It would take me hours to explain in just a brief second what they sent, information that they sent to me.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah.
And I think, so it's some of these things that are just so hard to put in words that are happening in the higher ages, and that's why we have a difficult time conceiving of them.
Well, that's because in this reality that we live in right at the moment, it doesn't lend itself to that particular type of thought processes, because people are still very rooted in the communication, which is, you know, speech or writing, or, you know, there has to be some physicality to it. But there are those that understand it, but the people that don't understand it kind of look at you like, no.
Right, no.
That can happen. That's not logical. Well, it may not be logical. Doesn't mean it can't happen.
Yeah, today we live in a very rational society. And
there's nothing wrong with that to a point, but I think we should all, in my opinion, I think everyone should at least entertain the idea that there are other ways of communicating. We do it all the time, but with looks, with gestures, you know.
Body language, you bet.
Right, body languages, actions. Words aren't necessary. It's a physical thing. I mean, the eyes still have to see it, but it's a different type of a communication. But we don't have the ability to take those gestures, if you will, or those body languages, and putting them into speech or into written form so that people understand the emotion or the energy behind it.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to those times.
Well, then try to imagine a race like Hesiod talks about in the Silver Golden Age, when, you know, so many people are clear and tuned in that, you know, they don't need a lot of verbal cues.
Well, let's break that down just a minute. You know, we've talked, if you would just recap the four ages, because what we want to talk about today is the higher ages, but I'd like to get into the silver in the upswing, not in the downswing, in the upswing, before we get to the golden age. And I thought maybe that might be a good place for us to start, the kind of subtle differences as the age progresses from silver to gold.
Sure. Well, the many cultures around the world talk about these ages. The Mayan called them suns, the Hopis called them worlds, and the Indians called them yugas, but the Greek called them ages and gave us very simple names, the iron, bronze, silver, and golden age. And that's on the way up, and they last roughly 1,200, 2,400, 3,600, and 4,800 years. So I always thought that was cool that the higher ages last a longer period of time.
I'm liking that too.
Yeah, and then on the way back down, obviously we go from gold to silver to bronze back to iron. And, you know, we find lots of writings, Greek and Roman times. Even the Romans are kidding about it a little bit. There's a little poem I'd put in my book. I don't remember what page it's on now, but it goes something like, if Caesar is our leader, we must be in the Iron Age. So they're having their political jokes, you know, even 2,000 years ago, talking about the age, recognizing that they're in the lowest age. And there's a wonderful Bible passage about all this, too, in the book of Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and they capture Daniel, who's this saint or sage, and ask him to interpret the dream, and he tells them that, you know, hey, what you've seen is the different ages through time. And he goes through that same sequence that the Greeks used, you know, over 1,000 years later. But Nebuchadnezzar sees it in the form of a statue. He sees the head of gold, the chest of silver, the legs of bronze, and the feet of iron.
Oh, my goodness. You know, conceptually, let's look at that. Okay? The feet. Very rooted. You know, can't see much because the feet are always on the ground. And then, you know, you go to the legs and then the torso and then the head. And how, as you move up through the body, the more you can see, the more complete the whole picture is of the human form. That just struck me.
Yes.
And that just struck me. That's very cool.
It is cool. and then when he then says it goes back the other way, you can see him saying that, you know, in the age that Nebuchadnezzar's in, things are actually going backwards. And he says something like, but don't worry, it'll return again.
Well, all life is cyclic in nature. We know that. We know that for a fact. We know that. Just based on seasons. I mean, that's rational in and of itself. So we do know that, you know, life is cyclic in nature. So that would just make so much sense that as we progress and degress, if you will, as civilizations and race, you know, that it would go up and go down. What goes up must come down or go around or what have you. So, totally fascinating.
I couldn't agree with you more. Unfortunately, the current day paradigm is just this absolutely linear...
Linear thought process.
Darwinian thing. If something came before, it must be more primitive.
Hang on, and we'll be right back with more of Walter Crittenden. Don't go away. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news. My upcoming guest, just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news. At Fate Magazine, they recognize the impossible can be possible. We explore the unknown so that it can be known, from personal accounts of ghosts and UFOs to scientific examination of psychic phenomena and earth mysteries. Fate's main purpose continues to be honest reporting and open discussion of the strange and the unknown. So log on to www.fatemag.com or call 1-800-728-2730.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and we are here with our second conversation. It's not really an interview, I wouldn't think, Walter, but we're here with Walter Crittenden. Welcome back to the show. This is great. Gosh, now, you know, I just had all these trains of thoughts, and they all kind of collided together. And now I can't remember where I was going to go with this next part that you and I were talking about. We were kind of going through the different... Oh, I know. You were going to start... We talked a little bit on break that you were going to talk a little bit about the different ages, the Darwinism and all of that, and where we're at kind of leads us into the next process that we're going through here.
Yes, we don't have this view of ages, you know, as our current paradigm. We have this... sort of Darwinian view right now that basically everything is pretty straight line linear, and therefore if it's older than us, it must be more primitive. But that wasn't always the case. That was just developed really in the last 150 years with Spencer and Darwin in the 1800s. Before that, the biblical view of history was very much the accepted paradigm in the West, and that was, the Earth was formed about 6,000 years ago. You had Adam and Eve, Noah, flood, and that's why civilization only goes back about 5,000 years or so. But before that one was the cyclical view, and this is pre-biblical, and as mentioned, is found in the myth and folklore of virtually every ancient culture. And the cyclical one was really quite complete in that, as we talked about, they broke it into the various ages. And I wanted to just read a little quote here from the Bhagavad Gita about life in the higher ages. And this is from page 736, the Bhagavad Gita by Paramahansa Yogananda. And it says, in Satya Yuga, and again, Satya Yuga is the highest yuga. In Satya Yuga, the spiritual age, the ideal man has the capacity to comprehend the source of universal magnetism. He will have the power of continuous contact with God, becoming a Brahman or knower of God. His perception will be through intuition. Interplanetary and interastral travel will be accomplished not by airplanes or atomic airships, but by instantaneous astral projection. He will have mastered the full spectrum of divine powers. So, I mean, that's pretty far out stuff. But
it is. Let me stop you right there. You know, there are people in this world today, even in the age that we're in, you know, if we're talking about the gold, silver, bronze, and iron age, even today that have some of those powers. I don't know that obviously I've not heard of anyone that's actually been able to transport themselves to another galaxy, at least not in the physicality. People talk about meditating and able to go there through a level of consciousness. But, you know, there are some people, obviously, that have clairvoyance. I was born with that gift. I have tried to work on it. I've tried to hone it and make it more so than what it is. There's people that have the ability to, you know, levitate themselves to some people that can read other people's thoughts. They live their life totally by their intuition as opposed to the rational mind. Is that what do you make of that? I mean, do you believe that throughout all the ages, like even in, let's talk about the highest level of the Golden Age, would you think that there would still be some people that wouldn't actually make it to that highest level? I mean, it seems like there's a smattering of, like, all the, do you understand where I'm trying to go with this?
Yeah, I think that, you know, consciousness right now is such that we can hardly even conceive of it, and so therefore I would have to agree with you that there's a lot of people that, myself included, that, just might not fit in there. But I think that's because, you know, it's the way we view it right now. There's another thought that in the highest age that man really masters sound. And here's a quote from the same book I was just reading. Through vibratory sound, all nature communes in its highest expression. Vak, the Vedic word for sound, is the repository of all knowledge, that vibratory intelligence through which the Vedas were divinely revealed to the rishis, who in turn through their own voice conveyed this illumination to others. When we hear things like this, I think we begin to realize that the higher ages are just beyond our conception right now.
Well, I think we all think that we understand it, but we only understand it to the level of which the ability we have in the world in which we live in and in the incarnation that we're in. So, I mean, I believe that if there is such a thing as reincarnation, that maybe we've all lived in this golden age and the iron age and bronze age. I mean, we've lived maybe that's the point, we just kind of keep cycling around as this 24,000-year cycle goes around, and we come in and we come out, because I believe there are some people that have that knowledge, if you will, or have those abilities. They come through and they go, man, I know I could just almost touch it, but I can't quite get there.
I hear you.
Does that make
but
sense?
It seems that there's a lot more of those people. You know, like you say, you were born with that, and, you know, we hear about Eckhart Tolle and Sai Baba, and, you know, many people around the planet nowadays seem to be manifesting higher skills. And so you wonder, you know, are we nearing an inflection point in this ascending cycle where maybe, you know, consciousness as a whole begins to sort of tip over and realize it's much more of an energy or conscious entity rather than just a purely physical thing?
Well, then that kind of brings us to the whole Mayan thing that we talked about during the break, which, you know, they say somewhere between the years of, what, 2006, 2012, depending on what book you read or what source you get it from, that there's a change. What do you make of this? What is your interpretation of
a
Mayan
points,
calendar kind of thing?
It was an amazing culture, first of all. You know, it's an outgrowth of the Olmec culture, which was the first one to develop the number zero. And, you know, a very complex culture of which there's no known texts left from that culture, so we really don't know too much about it. But the Mayan calendar system is very complex, probably one of the most complex in the world, in that they had a number of different calendars that could be cross-correlated so they could keep very accurate records. Unfortunately, Cortez destroyed all but about four of these Mayan codices, you know, destroyed literally hundreds of thousands of them. But on a couple of those, we find very insightful astronomical information on these few remaining ones regarding the transits of Venus, which Western scientists really didn't get down until about the 1600s or so. So they had a real good calendar system, and it was based on astronomy. And so what this whole notion of 2012 is based on is it's the end time of the fourth sun, one of the ages. And it's supposed to be when the sun aligns with the galactic center at the winter solstice. And sure enough, if you ask NASA, well, when is the sun going to align with the winter solstice, they will, going to align with the galactic center on the winter solstice, they will tell you that that would happen anywhere from about 1990 to about 2020. And the reason for that is that just the width of the sun, when you measure it against the sky, it actually takes a little time to go through that point. And NASA didn't find out, you know, exactly where the galactic center was until we had radio telescopes. We could do radio astronomy in the 60s and 70s. And there we sort of pinpointed that, gee, this is the point where most of the waves are coming from. Must be a very massive black hole there. That's the galactic center. So it just blows my mind at how the Mayans could have gotten so close to when we crossed the galactic center by saying 2012, and this calendar was started, you know, just thousands of years ago. So that's one amazing thing about the Mayans, that they could predict it in the first place. And then the second thing, of course, is what they said might happen there, and this is up to interpretation. As mentioned, many of the Mayan texts were just destroyed, so where we get most of the information now is from Mayan elders, and some of the descendants, mostly from Honduras, and they tell us that when the fourth sun ends, that we'll have, you know, this new age that comes along. But as far as I can tell from everything I've read, it doesn't mean an end of the world per se, you know, of all physical, this whole show here. It means an end of a time, an old way of things, and the start of a new way of things.
And so
I'm hopeful that's really what's happening, that maybe, you know, there's an ending of perceiving that everything is just physical, that we just live in a material world and we're material beings, and sure enough we're coming into this, you know, next higher age where we start to realize we're consciousness, we're energy, the world is malleable by our thoughts and intentions, and slowly a new reality dawns.
Okay, so here's a thought that dawned on me when you were talking about the galactic center, you know, when the sun aligns with the galactic center at a winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's the event that some people call zero point.
Could be. I think some of the,
you're familiar with that concept, right? It's like a day that turns into night, and it's like a 24-hour period where everything stops.
I've heard the concept, as a scientist,
because we've never, not to our knowledge, we've never been around when an event such as an astronomical event like that would happen. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what that is physically going to do as far as what will it do? I mean, obviously, an event like that, we already know that our Earth is very subject to whatever's going on in the star system, in the solar system. It affects weather, it affects, you know, emotions, it affects all of that here on the Earth plane. So I'm just kind of wondering if all of these, you know, coming to the galactic center may bring even more weather pattern changes. You know, I mean, there's also other things that contribute to it. I mean, obviously, you know, pollution, things like that, you know, global warming, et cetera, and so forth. But it's just something that conceptually just kind of popped in, and it just is kind of hanging there for me. So
yes, and I don't think we really know. You know, the Earth is definitely affected by space, both physically, where, you know, comets, asteroids, meteors can impact the Earth and cause problems from time to time,
yeah,
as the geological record shows. But also on a continuous basis by, you know, solar flares from the sun, bursts from other stars. As a matter of fact, there's an article on that just in the latest issue of Astronomy Magazine that talks about how our ionosphere, magnetosphere, is being affected much more frequently than we ever realized by other stars. You know, these gamma ray bursts, they register as very high readings on these satellites.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, ham radios can be knocked out during these events. And as you know, in Lost Star Myth and Time, we try to take that science a bit farther to point out Valerie Hunt's work at UCLA to show how consciousness could actually be affected by our binary motion. When our sun goes around this other star, carries the Earth with it, it slowly produces a change in consciousness. Well, it could be that there are certain points where you get going fast enough, because it is an elliptical orbit. You go slow and faster as you get towards the golden age, that it could be a sort of a critical mass point. But that's just speculation at this point.
Yeah.
We really don't
and
know.
Unfortunately, we don't have anything to draw on as far as information, especially when, you know, when civilizations during the golden age didn't write anything down because it wasn't needed.
I know. We have tantalizing myth and folklore, you know, that was passed down verbally for the most part all over the world, but it's just we tend to think of it as fairy tales.
I know, and you know, another thing that just kind of dawned on me here too, Walter, is, you know, as if we truly are, like, our spirit, if you will, our soul continues on, and maybe it inhabits in different places and different times, if that's a theory some people hold to, then, you know, the soul has a memory of everything it's ever done, ever been, ever, but I think it has to adapt to whatever environment is in as well, which I think gives some people some very extraordinary powers and abilities. I mean, I always thought that these science fiction movies that were out, you know, some of the movies that I always thought that they weren't just somebody's imagination, because what is imagination? I believe it's some kind of a repressed memory, if you will, or certainly something that would, it's not just somebody's creative spurt. Where does that creativity come from? I believe that it comes from a knowledge base, even if we don't remember it.
I hear you. You know, that reminds me of an email I received from a school teacher who had watched our film called The Great Year. That was Plato's name for this big cycle. And she found herself crying at the end of the film. I don't remember if I told you this story.
No.
But she sort of searched her consciousness and said, now, why am I crying on this movie? And it's sort of a science documentary. And she realized that as a little girl, she had believed in a higher age, a golden age. But she went to school and was taught all through school, high school, college, that it's not real. It's just a fairy tale. Forget it. And then when she saw the film, that there could be scientific evidence to support a higher age, she just cried.
And see, I there's other people besides her. I know a lot of people that have reactions. I have reactions to some of the strangest things, and you know, I always try to search that and go, well, why is this making me emotional? Whether it be crying or just my heart sometimes feels like it's going to burst from just almost like too much overwhelming love or something for a moment. I mean, you know, I think there's many people that experience that, and I think if they would look at it, they may be like this lady that sent you that email. She realized that there's something beyond what she remembers, at least in this physicality, but the soul remembers, the spirit of who we are remembers. So, you know, the consciousness aspect of it, I think, is something that, you know, we shouldn't just, you know, set aside. I think that has a great deal to do with how people are going to also handle the changes in humanity alone coming up, you know, through the course of just the fact that it does change. It's cyclic in nature.
Yeah, it sure is changing a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, this whole idea of memories reminds me of this search that's going on for the Akashic Records, you know, everybody.
Oh, yeah, the Akashic Records.
Right.
You know what, this is going to be a good place. Let's bring back, we're almost done on this segment, let's bring back the search for the Akashic Records, because that's a fascinating subject, Walter, and I think there's a lot of people out there that'd like to hear about this. So you guys stay tuned, and we're going to be right back with more of Walter and Journeys with Rebecca, so don't go away.
Have questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. Call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Oh, I love coming in like that. Nice and slow and easy. It's really good. Walter, welcome back. We're going to be talking about the Akashic Records. I'm going to kind of let you go for it. And let's go on with that, because I know I can hear people out there going, yes, yes, tell me. I would like to know more.
Well, you know, I was just going to say that a lot of people have been looking for it, and especially in Egypt, as if it's a physical thing. And I think Casey had said, you know, there might be something under one of the paws of the Sphinx, and And so there's been some work there to do some seismic testing and things like that. And I think that's sort of, you know, sort of a lower age material view of what the Akashic Records, you know, might be. We're looking for a big room with dusty old books or something versus, you know, when we're more evolved in the higher ages, if things are, as some of these myths and folklore hint, it could well be that a knowledge is embedded all around us. And I happened to meet a gal recently, a naturopathic healer, and she has spent a lot of time in Sedona, and she claims that she can get information directly from stones, and she just sort of listens to them and lies on them a little bit. And I was thinking about it, you know, here she's lying on this red sandstone. It's really silica. And it struck me that the way we store knowledge today in our computers, and every second people are doing it all over the world, is on silicon chips. And you know, we have a technology to get the information back out of that sand, you know, called computing devices. But it could be that, you know, the knowledge is there embedded in nature all around us, if not internally. And perhaps, you know, that's what the Akashic Records are.
Well, in my belief system is not just for my own self, but, you know, I've worked with a lot of people through the years on different issues and different situations. And in those that I have been around and been a part of, most all of us are kind of under the idea that the Akashic Records, something that are not a physical thing. They are a place that holds, much like the soul, if you will, or the spirit, as we talked about earlier, holds all things that you've ever been, thought, done, reacted to, et cetera, and so forth. It's kind of like your entire journey, not just of this life, but any other lives that you may have led, regardless of what kind of a body you've been in, or form. Doesn't necessarily mean you've been in a physical human body, maybe, and that's what the Akashic Records are.
And how would you access them then, through meditation or?
Well, and I've been very blessed to be open enough to openly communicate with what I call my spirit guides. It's a term that people understand, that so is not who they are, but just so that people can kind of understand that. And I have, from the heart of who I am, from the soul of who I am, I have asked to have information revealed to me about who I am, what I am, to make some kind of sense and peace of who I am here in this earth plane in this day and age. And my particular guides have walked me through the process of, but I was only able to retrieve just very little information when I was called away and said, you can't get any more information at this time. You know, I have to believe that everything is in a divine order, that those that I'm communicating with no better for me than I do myself, because I'm in a limited perspective being here on the earth plane, whereas they are not, in my opinion. And it's just a theory I have. It works for me.
Right. You know, it's, and you read so much about this. Swedenborg talked about it. Kingsley talks about it in his writings. And, of course, myth and folklore states the same thing, that, you know, that mankind is in touch with his ancestors and, you know, disembodied souls and things like that. But it's almost considered irrational to bring up that stuff at this day and age in the material world. You know, you're just...
Well, there's been some names I've been called, not all more nice. Freak is one of them.
Yeah.
You're a freak. Well, okay. I'd still rather be me than you. You know, kind of like me who I am. You know, that's the way it is.
Sure.
But, you know, I know other people. And meditation is really a very valuable tool. And that's one of the things that I also teach Walter, is meditation, and it's a very personal journey. Some people call it prayer work, you can call it meditation, call it whatever you want. And it's being in the space and being open. And one of the things that I had to really learn how to do it was a very difficult chore, was for me to look at what we would call shortcomings or faults, if you will, although that's a judgment, to allow yourself to see both the good and aspects of self. So the more you know of yourself, the easier it is for you to determine who you are. And if there's things about yourself you don't like, then you certainly can choose at that point, well, this is not who I am anymore. It's a conscious choice. So, you know, there's some definite value, you know, to connecting with your guides, and you know, it's not something that a lot of people can do the first time out, but certainly if they wanted to connect with their spirit guides or whoever it is that they would like to call them, you know, the Akashic Records could be something that could be available to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned meditation. You know, in our research, you know, trying to find out the character of cultures long, long ago, at a point that might have been a higher age, you find out, you know, meditation is one of these technologies, call it if you will, from a higher age that was passed down to where, in the lowest material age, you know, not only did very few people practice it, but I think here in the West it was really looked down upon, or you know, maybe just viewed as some new age phenomena.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm reading so many things, you know, Dr. Herbert Benson at Harvard and so many others have found, you know, tremendous psychological, physiological benefits from it.
Yes. It's a wonder. It absolutely is. Walter, before we run out of time, though, I want to give you the opportunity to give your website where people can get your book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, how they can reach you if they have any questions or comments about today's show or anything. So I'm going to let you kind of take it from here for a minute.
The website is loststarbook.com. That's probably the easiest one. But for those that are interested in the real hard science behind the binary motion, this mechanism we believe causes the rise and fall of civilization, they can go to binaryresearchinstitute.org. And at either site, I think you can get information on both the book as well as the film, The Great Year.
And I want to, again, thank you very much for sending that DVD to me. And anybody who's out there listening, I highly recommend you get this DVD. If you don't purchase the book, at least get the DVD. It's going to put a whole lot of different things into perspective. It's narrated by James Earl Jones, one of my most favorite people in the world. I just could listen to that man all day long. I think you probably could too, couldn't you, Walter?
Oh yeah, he's such a nice man, and between his authoritative voice and the animation, I think it tells a pretty good story.
Yeah, and he's got a good spirit being about him. He's just a wonderful man. But for those of you who didn't get a chance to write it down, you can get to Walter's websites via my website, journeyswithrebecca.com. Walter, I can't thank you enough for being a guest here on the Journeys with Rebecca show. I wish you well, and I know that we will be in contact again very soon.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
And blessings to you.
Okay.
I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now, you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening educational talk and discoveries. This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.